This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Rappaport to the rescue with award-winning animal advocate, best-selling author, journalist, and pet products creator, Jill Rappaport.
Hi, welcome to Rappaport to the Rescue. I'm Jill Rappaport. Now, if you've been following and listening to my podcast, and I sure hope you have, you know that I've had some pretty incredible guests on this show. A-list for sure. Actors, musicians, supermodels, national talk show hosts, network news correspondents, and newsmakers, all with one thing in common. They are true megastars in front of the camera. Well, my guest today is a superstar behind the lens. Doug Liman is one of the most revered and respected directors and producers in the business today. He is the man responsible for such blockbuster hits like Swingers, Go, The Bourne Identity, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jumper, Edge of Tomorrow, and American Made. And Liman's latest film is the remake of the 1989 cult classic Roadhouse, which was just released on Amazon Prime Video and starring Jake Gyllenhaal, all bucked up for that one. But what you may not know about this incredibly gifted filmmaker is that he is also obsessed and absolutely adores animals. Of course, that's why he's on the show, right? And that's why I couldn't wait to get him on this show. His animals have always been and are truly children to him. Everything from dogs to goats. Can't wait to hear about that, pets. So when we come back, award-winning director and producer, Doug Liman, on Rappaport to the Rescue.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Rappaport to the Rescue. I'm Jill Rappaport. My guest today, director, producer Doug Liman, who has had hit after hit on the big screen with beloved and powerhouse films like Swingers, The Bourne Identity, Fair Game, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and his newly released Roadhouse, just to name a few. And on the small screen, Liman has also produced Ratings Gold with The O.C., Covert Affairs, and Suits. He is also the recipient of several coveted awards for his filmmaking. I am thrilled to have Doug here with me today, not only for his talent, but especially for his love of everything on four legs. This guy is crazy about animals, so I'm crazy about you, Doug. Welcome to Rappaport to the Rescue.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it doesn't go over well in my relationships, but my screensaver on my phone is my beloved goat, Ruby.
Oh, you know what? And I was reading about Ruby, seeing the pictures, watching her walk around with a leash. Those stories are legendary. Tell us about your goat, Ruby.
I have a small farm in Martha's Vineyard because I love animals. And, you know, like a farm is really the best way to just have animals and have, you know, maybe something beyond just having a dog. So I'll try to tame almost any animal. A raccoon got into my chicken coop and I caught it and it had a heart trap and spent a little time trying to tame the raccoon unsuccessfully. I adopted a troubled goat that wasn't getting along with other goats. And so I took her in, Ruby. And we have no idea how old she is, but she's definitely older than probably. She's way beyond how long goats are supposed to live, for sure.
And your neighbors all know her, and some love her, and others,
She's been hard to contain, you know, so she likes to go down to the beach, and some people love seeing this, you know, a wild farm or the beach, and you know, she's a little rambunctious. I mean, she loves men, and she's a little mean to women and children.
Well, you know, I loved hearing stories about your animals, and the way we know each other is because of one of your relatives, who's one of my dear friends, the one and only beloved Joan Hamburg, the first lady of New York radio. So unbelievable. And she used to talk about Doug and the Animals. And then I knew how successful you were. And I thought, oh, wow, he's quite the catch.
I had trouble containing the animals. Sometimes the goat and the pigs would just take off down the road. And, you know, and I'm off making movies. So I'd get a call, you know, from either the police in Chilmark or from a neighbor being like, you know, your pigs and your goat are here and they're, you know, they're 2 miles down the road from your house. And you have to try to convince someone to help try to get them, you know, because I'm not there to recover them.
And I know your love of dogs. And I believe one of your pets, when he passed, you actually gave a funeral for that dog, an official funeral.
You're acting like that's unusual.
I think it's norm. I'm asking, you did it, right?
Having a farm, you learn some expressions that we sort of take for granted. You sort of learn where they come from. Like, you know, don't hog, you know, is a, you know, expression we use all the time. Like, don't hog the computer, don't hog the... But like, when you actually have pigs and you put food out, you realize where the term hogging comes from. I have sheep, and you understand where the word sheepish comes from. And during my dog's funeral, I did learn where the sort of nail in the coffin comes from.
Well, I know how much that dog meant to you. And wasn't this the dog that I believe many, many years ago, might have been even in the year 2000, ran away and you offered a reward and also whoever would return the dog would get a role in the Bourne Identity? Is that a true story?
That is. I still have the wanted flyers. It's like one of my, you know, souvenirs that I keep up in my apartment. Turns out he didn't run away. We thought he'd run away. Turns out he'd been kidnapped and kidnapped for 3.5 years.
Oh my goodness, this is unbelievable.
While I was making the TV show, The OC, I got a ransom call.
Are you kidding me? This is unbelievable.
And they said if I gave them $10,000, you know, I'd get the dog back. Otherwise, I'd never see the dog again. And they didn't have a lot of answers. And my brother was a federal prosecutor at the time. And he had just prosecuted an extortion case, like a Bill Cosby extortion case. And he was like, this is extortion. They don't have your dog. They're just preying on you. Because every year I put these flyers out again, because thinking like, you know, miracles happen. Like I thought, like I lost them in Washington, D.C. I live in New York. I thought, well, maybe he's crossing New Jersey and maybe that takes a year and he'll show up. You hear the stories every once in a while for 3.5 years. And my brother was like, they don't have your dog. There's no way. And I finally was like, you know what? For $10,000, I have to know. I can't go the rest of my life not knowing. So then my brother said, fine, if you're really going to go through with this, let me make a few phone calls. You know, because my brother worked in law enforcement. And the FBI actually did a sting operation and turns out they had my dog and we got him back.
Unbelievable. And they knew it was Doug Liman's dog when they took it?
They didn't know when they took him. It turns out the reason what happened was it was a fraternity prank. And then when I did all this press to try to get the dog back, part of offering a part in the Bourne Identity so that the Washington Post would do a story and, you know, so people would see that. And then if someone saw the dog walking around, they would be like, oh, we know whose dog that is. The problem was it was a prank by a fraternity. And once they realized this dog is famous, they're like, we're going to get in trouble. And so they called like a fraternity alum who lived in Ohio. And they said, will you take this dog? Because if we get caught with this dog, like the fraternity is going to get kicked off campus. And so shipped the dog off to Ohio to live with a family. And then the students, you know, who had originally stolen the dog that after 3.5 years had graduated, one of these kids couldn't get a job and thought, well, I could probably trade this dog. So he actually stole the dog back from the family he'd given it to in Ohio, like Jackson.
This is a movie, Doug.
And the thing is, Jackson actually lived to 17 and a half for a big Australian Shepherd. So I got the years back with interest.
Did he recognize you right away? How did he look? What was the reunion like?
It actually was on Good Morning America, the reunion. My girlfriend, who also co-owned him, like they had like the tearful, huggy reunion. Eventually, I mean, he became like the love of my life. The dog I'm referring to with the coffin is, you know, is Jackson and I've never replaced it. I've never gotten another dog. Like, you know.
I know.
I mean, I know you have like 4 dogs, but like sometimes you have a dog that's so special. I have a goat now, but you know, you just can never replace Jackson.
Unbelievable story. And I really do think this is a movie, but that's your area. You know, I set up you in the open and then live to you, and I mentioned your awards. And I know, and I've heard you say this, that you don't even like to hear awards associated with your name. Why is that?
I like awards. You know, everyone likes accolades. I like good reviews and awards, but I don't want to chase awards. I'm interested in sort of making movies that are people-pleasing. You know, when I was a kid, I was the class clown, and I don't know if I actually was successfully entertaining my fellow students, but I probably wasn't. But, you know, that's that's my ethos. I think I'm still the sort of class clown. And I mean, including these animals in Martha's Vineyard that are constantly running amok. You know, it's like there's a front page story in the Vineyard Gazette a few years ago, you know, goats gone wild about like, you know, just constantly being loose and the town wanting to pass a new ordinance about requiring people to keep control of the farm animals. And they never passed it, but I was excited to then lobby that there be a, that Rumi be grandfathered out of that, even though she literally would have been the one animal for which they were creating that law, but they never did. I got her sheep. And so now with the sheep, she doesn't feel so lonely when I'm not there.
Well, I love that, you know, you're doing it your way.
So class clowns don't get awards. They don't get straight A's, by the way.
Exactly.
And they don't get awards.
But I know that for you, that's the least of it. For you, it's making these incredible films about anti-heroes. And really making movies that have so much impact. And if the awards come, it's nice, but you don't necessarily want it associated with your name. You'd rather be known as a filmmaker first instead of award-winning filmmaker.
Yeah, I just like, when I hear award-winning filmmaker, I'm like, oh, is the film going to be boring?
And, you know, the list of the films you've made and the stars that you've worked with, from Tom Cruise to Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, and I want to talk about that because while you were making Mr. and Mrs. Smith, perhaps the biggest personal breakup was going on in all of entertainment. Everybody was talking about Brangelina and Jennifer, and that was all during this movie. I would imagine it helped box office sales, but it also, for you as a creative person, was probably a little irritating.
There were challenges just in that, first of all, they were getting so famous, you know, and the affair was making them so famous that, like, it became harder to film just to try to keep paparazzi away. And, you know, we would sort of, Brad Pitt would ride a motorcycle to work and we would know he was getting close because we'd hear the helicopters first because there'd be paparazzi and helicopters following him. And probably, like, one of my, like, favorite images in my mind from the movie is during the press tour. We were in Santa Monica, and there are these two hotels next to each other, Shutters and Casa del Mar. They're right across the street from each other, and we were doing press between both hotels. And we were in Casa del Mar, and then we needed to move, you know, it was with Brad and Angie, to Shutters across the street. And there were like 1,000 reporters outside the building. I mean, literally, it looked like a zombie movie, the number of people out there. And we're like, how are we going to get from one hotel to the other? And Brad, you know, is very chivalrous, and he was like, I'll go first, you know, and pull some of the crowd so that then Angie could have a more clear path to get across, and I would go across with Angie. And I remember seeing Brad, like, exit the building, and suddenly he's just being chased by, like, 1,000 people. And he did successfully pull them away, but my last image of him was, like, heading down Pico Boulevard, chased by, like, 1,000 paparazzi. And then Angie and I had a clear route to then just get across. And like, we didn't see him for like an hour.
But I'm sure it also helped with the box office because there was so much curiosity factor after that. Everyone wanted to see that chemistry between the two of them, which was red hot in that film, Doug. And sadly, they're getting the same attention now for the opposite reason, for their bitter divorce.
I salute any relationship in Hollywood.
But the people you've worked with, and I've heard these celebrities talk about you. We talked also about Tom Cruise, Anne Hathaway, Jake Gyllenhaal now. When they hear it's a Doug Liman film, two words, I'm in. It's unbelievable. The people that immediately gravitate towards you and never seem to say no to you.
I get said no to all the time.
By big stars, Doug? Really?
I know, but I, you know, I ask a lot. But no, I mean, I am in a really, really fortunate place in my life where the people really do say yes. And I'm super appreciative of that. I'm shocked and appreciative. And I never, ever take it for granted. And I learn a lot from Tom Cruise, who, by the way, never takes it for granted, ever. Like, he goes to work every day like he's got to prove he's a star.
Yeah, the old adage, you're only as good as your last piece and your next piece, it's your audition reel. It's like everything is new and first and give it 100%. And I have my own personal story with Tom Cruise where he really was very instrumental in me getting my first job in television in New York.
Really?
And he's a wonderful human being. He is such a lovely person.
He's the most generous human being I've ever met, you know, where I don't know what I meant, like financially generous. I'm talking about like generous of spirit.
Right.
The film business is very competitive and catty and kind of, you know, in a way it's cliquey like high school and no one's meaner than when they're in high school. And like film business has a component of that where like people, like they don't necessarily root for other people's success. Like Tom Cruise roots for other people's success. I've worked a lot with him. And when he hears about a film performing really well, it has nothing to do with. He's so happy for those people.
When Roadhouse came out, you were hoping, we all thought it was going to be a major theatrical release. And then you found out it was going to Amazon Prime Video. You are not happy.
No. You know, there's just some movies that are like, that are a party that you want to share together. You know, like a lot of Top Gun. If you have a lot of Tom Cruise films, like Top Gun or something. Like, I don't know how good Top Gun really is as a movie if you just sat down and watched it. But when you sit and communally watch it, it brings people together in a way that only movies can do.
Right.
And Roadhouse was conceived that way. It was, you know, my contract says it's a theatrical film. It was made for a movie called MGM, that only studio, you know, it's a storied studio by the Bond franchise. They only do theatrical films, but Amazon bought MGM while we were making the movie. And they said, you know, well, just trust us. We'll do what's right for the movie. And the deal was just going through while I was making the movie. So I was like, yeah, of course, they don't really know what they're doing yet. But if the movie's great, they'll put it in theaters. And if it's not great, you know, then it doesn't deserve to go in theaters.
But it was great.
Yeah, the movie should be good if you're going to put money into putting it into theaters.
Right.
I'm into that. But then here was Amazon going, you know, it's my highest testing film. And I've had films that have foreign identities that, you know, multi-billion dollar franchise. So when it's my highest testing film, like, that's not insignificant. And Amazon was like, we're going to use it to sell ads on Amazon Prime. It's not just that they were going to stream it, that they're like, it's going to become a TV movie with advertising. And I was like, that is not what we signed up for. And I get that this can generate revenue for you, but it's not right to me. It's not right to the people who are in the movie. You know, I promised Jake Gyllenhaal when we were going to, you know, when I cast him in the movie, I said, this role will propel you into the next level of stardom.
Yeah. And it also denies Jake an Oscar nomination.
I don't even get that, but he would have been a bona fide box office star. The way that Born Identity did that for Matt Damon. And Mr. and Mrs. Smith did that for Angelina Jolie, and it put her in a different kind of movie than she'd been in before. So it was just wrong for everybody involved in the movie, and most of all for the audience.
Well, I saw it in my bed, surrounded with my dogs, and I was into it. I mean, you know, I know it's not quite the same as a theatrical experience, but man, it packed a punch, and I found it to be so entertaining, so wonderful. I mean, I couldn't take my eyes off Jake Gyllenhaal's abs. I got to be honest, I never saw a physique like that. I don't remember him looking like that in Brokeback Mountain.
No, well, that's the whole film that started because we were, Jake and I were having dinner in New York City to actually talk about a different movie. But Jake was talking about the way he was talking about his career. I was like, suddenly in my back of my head, I mean, I just read the script for Roadhouse. I was like, forget about the movie we were meeting on. Like, we should talk about Roadhouse. And I had seen Jake that summer in Martha's Vineyard with his shirt off. At this, we both did the same road race, and I had noticed his physique
from a filmmaker standpoint.
No, over the summer, I just saw it as like, as I said, I don't have the ferocity of spirit that Tom Cruise has. I'm like, how is he so much better shape than me? And by the way, like 10 times faster, too, just better in all regards. But I said to him at this dinner, I said, like, I don't want to get me too, but I saw you with your shirt off this summer, and I think you should take a look at this script, Roadhouse. Jake's Oscar nominated. I'm sure anytime someone wants to work with him, they're like, you know, blowing smoke up his ass about what a brilliant actor he is. And I just was like, I don't care about your acting. You're going to have your shirt off this whole movie. You should read the script. And you, I guess you said that, you know, sometimes it's a little easier for me to get actors to say, yes, he committed to the movie right there without even reading the script.
But I understand to keep up that physique, he was a bit of a bear, kind of a moody bastard, huh?
Well, it's one thing, you know, he's a friend, so you don't see friends that often.
Right.
When you actually start working together, you're together, you know, 14 hours a day. And he was hangry. The work that goes into looking like that, like, we all have ripped abs like Jake. They're just underneath a bunch of fat. So you have to starve yourself to reveal them. Plus, you have to work out to make them bigger. I mean, so he was...
ornery, to say the least.
He was ornery, yeah.
Well, you had to feed the guy. I mean, he had to keep up his energy and his strength.
No, he's eating like, you know, bland chicken breast, you know, and an exact size piece of it, just enough to keep him alive.
Wow.
But not happy.
Well, that's good for that movie because, man, that helped him pack quite a punch. So I would think that all worked together for the role. But I heard that you never even saw the original 1989 with Patrick Swayze. You didn't want to see it until your film was made.
Yeah, because Born Identity, actually, there was a TV movie, Born Identity, before my Born Identity. I didn't even know existed until I started Born Identity. And then I started watching, it was with Richard Chamberlain. I started watching that Born Identity. And after 5 minutes, I said, you know, I don't want this in the back of my head at all. I'm going to make my own. And to this day, I've never seen the original Born Identity TV movie.
But you did finally see the original Roadhouse.
I eventually, after we were done, we were pretty much almost done editing. The Alamo Draft House in Brooklyn was showing Roadhouse for like 2 days. And Joel Silver is my producer on Roadhouse. He produced the original Roadhouse in the 80s. And we took the whole editing room to go see the movie Alamo Draft House.
I imagine the first one felt and looked kind of colorless to you compared to what you have created.
Yeah, I know that the original Roadhouse is truly beloved. You know, Joel Silver will be the first to say it's not a good movie. He's the one who produced it. But you can't argue with the fact that all these years later, it still has an audience and it's somehow zeitgeist. And that's the reason I was fighting Amazon on the streaming release is that, you know, movies that play in theaters can become part of our zeitgeist.
That's right.
Even movies that don't do well, like the original Roadhouse was a flop in the theaters. But it's part of our zeitgeist. I mean, it's made fun of on Modern Family. There's, you know, and movies that come out on streaming. If I told you to like Amazon's top streaming hits from last year, you've never heard of them. And they're movies that Amazon's proud of. Like they don't necessarily cross over.
But this one got a lot of buzz. First of all, Jake was on a million shows promoting it. People wanted to see this one. So let me ask you, Doug, having directed the biggest names on the planet in this business, when they do a crappy take, how do you handle that? How do you say, oh, maybe we should do it again, or that wasn't your best? Do you walk on eggshells or do you just put it out there? Because you've got chutzpah.
My cousin, your good friend, John Hamburg, you know, was always sort of told me, you know, you got to bury a critique between two compliments.
Right.
She calls it, you know, some kind of something sandwich, you know, but like, I just go for the critique. These days, I'll sort of, you know, maybe start a movie, tell someone like, look, we're all together because we respect each other. I'll tell you that right now. I'm not going to repeat that ever again. Like now, anything you hear out of my mouth is just going to be negative. I'm giving you the one compliment at the beginning and then like, I'm not going to pop it every time. There was a scene, I was doing a film American Made with Tom Cruise, and there was a scene that we were having a lot of trouble with, and it just wasn't, it turns out there was a problem with the writing of the scene, but you don't know that while you're trying to shoot it. You're like, we would do a take of the scene, and then I'd call cut, and then I would try to say something a little nice, and then be like, okay, that was, and then the nice thing, and then go, but let's try this. They have to look winning on screen. You know, you're like a coach, you know.
Yeah, with the you don't want to deflate those huge.
You don't want to deflate them because they got to look like movie stars on screen. So, but after 50 takes, you start running out of a nice thing to say. We did a take and I called cut and I go, that was, and I'm literally trying to find like some kind of something positive to say and I'm struggling. And Tom Cruise goes, terrible? Then I go, yeah, that was terrible. And he goes, I knew it was terrible. I was like, to be honest, it was awful. And Tom was like, I knew it was awful what I was doing it. And then we just started riffing on how freaking bad he was in that last tape and sort of relishing in it. And, you know, I love when you can create a safe space because Tom creates a safe space for me to take chances and fail. And that's kind of magical when you get that safe space where you can try something, fall flat on your face, and we can just laugh about it.
Well, you know, you've made amazing movies. And we talked about this in the beginning about anti-heroes. And because you love animals so much, would there ever be a possibility, Doug, like a film like My Dog Skip, a sweet, loving animal story? Are you going to go for a Cujo? Because I could see you doing an animal movie.
You know, I call my goat Sweet Ruby, but like my niece is around the corner. If I asked her to come over and tell me what she thinks of Ruby, I think she'd be using the word mean.
So you'd make a Cujo.
So my beloved Ruby is an anti-hero to most people who meet her, or just a mean goat, mean old goat. So that's obviously who I'm attracted to as character.
I'm going to stay on you to maybe open up your heart and home to another rescue dog. If I find a mean one, mean as a snake, I'm going to be contacting you. One that's all growling and grizzling.
Well, actually, I'm open to the idea of getting a dog to protect my chickens.
Oh, yes. Very
would have to live out there with the chickens. But
actually, yeah. The Australian Shepherd, they're the best. They're such great animals for protecting farms.
Jackson was an Australian Shepherd.
Yeah, livestock. They're the best for that. Now, I understand you also have a really exciting summer coming up. You're going to be working with Matt Damon again and Casey Affleck?
Yeah, I mean, we finished working. The film's coming out.
It's coming out,
you know, the very beginning of August. It's a comedy. Last time I directed Matt was Born Identity. And
very different.
This is a very different role, but it's a heist film. There's action in it. But Matt and Casey are brilliant together.
Is this the first time they've been together since Good Will Hunting in a movie?
No, like Matt's in Oppenheimer. Casey's also in Oppenheimer.
Oh,
like
that's right. That's right.
If you look at their filmographies, like there's a lot of overlap. But this is a two-hander.
Wow.
It's not like Matt in a bigger role and Casey in a smaller role.
So they're equal. They're all best friends.
Exactly equal. And Matt and Casey are as salt of the earth, solid, great human beings as exist. People always complimenting movie stars. Like you wouldn't even know Matt's a movie star. Like he is just salt of the earth. Casey's like as solid as it comes. You know, they're both great fathers.
He's such a nice guy. I got to interview him for a film called Rounders many years ago.
They're just fantastic. But despite all that, you know, once you get them together and Ben, because Ben was the producer, Ben Affleck, you're like, I'm in someone else's family and there's insanity.
But that says a lot about you because, you know, they're three of the biggest names in the business and they've all directed as well. And so to put that confidence in you and to be part of this collaboration is wonderful.
I like a little dysfunction. I'm like, I'm amused by the fact that like, there's things going on in the making of the film that have nothing to do with the instigators that are just relate to issues they've had going back since they were kids. And it's playing out on rewrites of the script where like Casey keeps putting a monologue back in the script that he wants to do and Matt keeps taking it out. And I'm like, this doesn't even have anything to do with instigators. Whatever's going on here, like leave it in the script. Let Casey have it.
But it must be so gratifying for you to work with these people again, to be with Matt Damon again. You know, it speaks volumes about you and your relationships with these people because you seem to work with a lot of these.
It was almost emotional that, you know, there's a moment on the set of Instigators where Matt said to me something about the production. Like I spent a lot of time shooting Casey's close up on a scene that really was a scene that's driven by Casey's character. So I literally spent like 4 or 5 hours just on Casey. And then it was time to turn around and film Matt's side. And Matt said, just so you know, like, there's no ego in this for me. Like, this is Casey's scene. Like, if you get it in 5 minutes with me, don't feel like you got to like balance it and shoot me for as long as you shot Casey's. Like, movies are like going to war and you got to like, you know, allocate your resources where they're needed. And I totally agree with you having allocated the resources of this scene to Casey. You don't need to allocate anything to me. I thought, wow, he has really grown as an actor and a filmmaker, like really sees the big picture. And in that moment, I was thinking, I've probably grown too. I don't see it, but like, he's probably looking at me and seeing how I've evolved since Born Identity. And that gave me a kind of confidence going in from that point forward on Instigators of just feeling like, you know, I probably have grown. Because, you know, every movie you sort of start from scratch.
Right.
Really build on anything you've done before. Because the movies aren't like each other and you're hiring different crew and different actors. And so until that moment, I hadn't necessarily felt that like I had grown or learned anything over the years of making films. And in that moment, I thought, I probably have. I don't see it, but Matt is probably seeing it in me.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'm really excited to see this comedy in August. This is going to be great. What a year you've had. Both of these huge films. And you never take a break. You are always on the go. And when you're not making films, you're in your plane. You still flying your own plane?
I do.
Unbelievable. You are Mr. Daredevil.
I'm flying my plane on Monday to the Bahamas to go dive in a submersible at 3,000 feet for research for a movie I'm developing. Do they expect this from me? I have a film I'm developing with Tom Cruise where we're going to go into outer space.
When is that happening?
That's in the works. Tom's schedule is super busy. But, you know, they don't bat an eyelash when it's like Doug's going into outer space with Tom Cruise.
I got to take you to a shelter and get you a rescue dog. Keep you at home more on ground. Keep you at your farm.
I'm pretty grounded. I mean, I have a farm. I'm talking to you and 2 feet under me are my seedlings that are, you know, getting ready for summer and
oh.
Grow lights under the desk.
Well, you're certainly diversified. And the question on every woman's mind is, why aren't you married? Is that next for you, your next big move? That's probably your most frightening move, right?
I mean, marriage is sort of a conventional thing to do. And, you know, like,
you're not conventional.
The best thing to come out of this space film, because, you know, I often am challenged of like, why can't you be more normal? Especially that is something my girlfriend says often. And I'm like, I'm going into outer space with Tom Cruise. If you want normal, you got the wrong guy. Which I thought was going to like solve all my relationship problems, just to be able to whip that little expression out.
Exactly.
Didn't solve anything.
Listen, you're preaching to the choir here. My nickname's Lord of the Rings. I've been engaged and married so many times, so forget it. But I think you're great. I loved Roadhouse, and I really, really love that you stood up for your beliefs. You know, it was more important for you to speak your mind than ruin your health, and also for the film and the people involved. You had to speak your mind, and I give you so much credit for that. And what I love most is your love of animals, but I am going to try to get you a rescue dog. We're going to have to look for one soon. I'll be on the lookout. I know just what to look for now, Doug, and I'll be calling you saying I found you the perfect mean dog.
It needs to protect chickens.
But thank you so much for taking the time. I know how incredibly busy you are. And if you're not in outer space or in the ocean, it's great to have you here. So we really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's so nice talking to you.
So nice talking to you. And remember, just like Doug, please open up your hearts and homes to an animal in need. I promise it will be the best gift you give yourself. Thanks for tuning in today to Rappaport to the Rescue.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.